Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fearless eyes.
Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
So whenever you do the countdown, we always do our countdown. You say 3, 2, 1, and you push record. Then I push record, but you never actually say record. And so you said 3, 2, 1, record. Today it threw me off a little bit.
It's hard for me to keep up with this. It's been so long since we recorded. I don't know what I normally do.
I thought the record was just understood. I didn't know I was going to get an actual prompt.
Yeah, I was making sure you knew what the 3, 2, 1 was for. A lot of counting going on. I got to keep up with a lot of stuff here, pushing buttons and counting.
That's the electric company, isn't it? On PBS, 3, 2, 1.
I don't know. I haven't seen that in a long time.
That was a show back in the day, I think.
It also used to be the offensive line for the Buffalo Bills.
What's that?
The electric company.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they called them because they turned on the juice. And you remember that? The offensive line for the Buffalo Bills, when O.J. Simpson was there, they referred to them as the electric company because they turned on the juice.
I thought you said the defensive line.
No, the offensive line.
Oh.
If I said the defensive line, I misspoke.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes more sense if it's the offensive line, since O.J. Simpson was known as the Juice.
Yeah, that was before he was a murderer.
Now he's just known as a felon.
Yeah. He's known as prisoner number... No, he's out. He's out now. He's not a prisoner anymore.
He's on social media.
I don't follow him. I sure don't want him following me.
I've seen a few of his posts before, and they're a little disconcerting would be a good word to use.
I'd say at this point in life, that guy can't be all there.
Speaking of disconcerting, do you notice anything different about my facial hair?
Well, yes. You're not speaking out of that furry tunnel that you usually speak out of. You've got it trimmed back, and mostly I just see a kind of Fu Manchu kind of thing going on. There's a little bit of beard around there, but it's mostly I'd see the mustache into the lower chin, kind of like a Fu Manchu. Reminds me of Joe Willie Namath.
I am dabbling in the mustache arts. I've decided that to trim the beard back and kind of go for the mustache look. I've never had a mustache before, but I'm dabbling with the mustache.
Well, I don't have either right now, but most of the time people either have a goatee or a beard. Mustaches are not very common. I hear people make jokes about it like, hey, the 90s called, they want their mustache back.
Speaking of that, I mean, you had a mustache for pretty much quite a long time that I've known you when I was younger.
I did through probably the late 80s and early 90s. I did have a mustache. Most of the time I thought it was pretty cool.
What did everybody else think about that mustache during that time?
During that time, I guess it was all right. Nobody ever gave me a hard time about it. But when we look at pictures now and we see the pictures, usually from my daughters, I get, oh God, Dad, why'd you have that mustache?
Well, see, I'm going for kind of the more of the modern day mustache, which is kind of a scraggly beard and, you know, a few days growth beard and mustache,
yeah.
Not a clean shaven mustache.
I see. Okay. Well, I think if you're going to grow a mustache, you should go with the handlebar.
The handlebar?
Yeah. And get that out to where it's like out as far as your ears on the side and turned around in a loop, you know, wax that thing up. Look like you're like a bug with its mandibles or whatever they're called.
I'd like to go for the Hercule Poirot mustache.
Which one's that?
That's the Agatha Christie detective.
Oh.
He's like, got a huge big mustache and it comes out and it comes to the ends and it's twirled a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like the guys in Tombstone, that movie.
Yeah.
And Wyatt Earp, that big.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. Reminds me of... Who was that character actor that then did the cereal commercials later? that was a big, heavy set older guy, and he had the big, thick mustache that like hung all the way down over his lower lip.
Not Sam Elliott.
He was an older guy than that. He was in the movie Cocoon.
Oh, Wilford Brimley?
Yeah, that guy, Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, he just recently passed away.
Well, he was old then, and that movie was 40 years old, I'd say.
Yeah, he also did the diabetes commercials.
Yeah. Well, some cereal commercial he used to do. Grape Nuts, I think, maybe?
I think it was. Grape Nuts. That sounds like something Wilford Brimley would sponsor is Grape Nuts.
Yeah, but I think he was one of those kind of guys that when we looked at him like in Cocoon and he played an old guy in that, he was probably like 40 and just looked that way, you know?
He might be right.
There's some guys that are like that. They just look old.
I will say one thing. Since I trimmed my beard, I think I look younger with just a mustache, not a long beard.
I go back and forth on that. When I've grown a beard before, I look and I think, boy, this beard makes me look younger. And then when I get tired of it and shave it off, which usually only takes a couple of months because it's just too much. So I shave it off and I look in the mirror and I go, boy, I'm glad I shaved off that beard. It makes me look younger.
It works both ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just you get tired of seeing it whatever way it is. My problem is my beard comes in practically all white now. So it's whiter than my hair. My hair is darker than my beard. Most people I know, their beard stayed dark and their hair went white. So I don't know. I'm opposite.
Yeah, I got quite a bit of white in my beard these days. It's caught up to me pretty quickly.
Well, that's because you took on 3 teenage sons.
Yeah, that'll do it to you. That'll turn all your hair white.
Because you're too young otherwise.
So this actually, we decided to not do a court appointed anymore. We're going to do a facial hair podcast where we just discuss facial hair and different facial hair options and spinoffs on that.
And we'll go into manscaping.
Manscaping podcast.
There will be no accompanying YouTube video. Yeah. It's strictly your own imagination. We're just going to talk you through it.
Change our podcast name to Manscaped. Now, this episode is actually, we're going to talk about embezzlement. So if you're going to talk about embezzlement, then you probably should have kind of Snidely Whiplash type mustache.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. You read my mind.
And embezzlement was actually kind of suggested by Jonathan Riley on the court-appointed Facebook group page. And some people were kind of debating about embezzlement. And we thought that might be kind of a fun episode to talk about and pair it with mustaches.
Yeah, he kind of asked, was embezzlement the same thing as theft? And it is, in a way. And it is, not in another way.
And there's your answer, Jonathan. That's it.
So, this has been court appointed. Thank you for waiting 3 weeks for that.
So, when you talk about embezzlement, it is defined as the act of withholding assets for the purpose of conversion, also known as theft, of such assets by one or more persons to whom the assets were entrusted, either to be held or to be used for specific purposes. And embezzlement is a type of financial fraud. It generally involves violating some sort of fiduciary duty. So what you're essentially doing when you embezzle something is you are involving trust, and you're breaking that trust by converting property or money or something along those lines for your own purpose. And that's the difference of embezzlement.
You know, whenever I hear the word asset, I keep thinking of like 2 or 3 ceramic buttocks, and that's an asset.
What?
A set of assets. Assets. There's two or three of them there. They're ceramic, and you're looking at them, and it's an asset.
Where have you come across ceramic buttocks?
Well, sometimes they have those little cherub things, you know. Sometimes the cherubs are naked, so you might have a cherub butt.
So the little cherub statue where they're kind of like their backs turned to you and then they're looking over their shoulder like shooting a bow and arrow.
Yeah, and they all kind of match, so that's a asset.
I was thinking of something like some sort of avant-garde type modern art museum with like just butts.
Oh,
just
that would work too. If they were like casts of ones or something, yeah. Plaster cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you identify this celebrity by her butt?
Didn't Kim Kardashian make a cast of her butt or something?
She's a wax figure or something, I think.
I think I seem to remember reading that.
Well, I don't know.
Well, that's not the kind of assets that we're generally talking about with embezzlement.
All I know is that would take a lot of plaster.
You're probably right about that.
Might create a plaster shortage.
So the important part about embezzlement, like I said, it involves trust. And usually there's some sort of trustee and some sort of beneficiary. And oftentimes it happens with employees.
The beneficiary is the guy getting the money.
So oftentimes it involves an employee who takes money or property from their employer, or it could even be sometimes a customer, and they use it for their personal benefit. And there's different ways that this can happen, a lot of different examples. So a employee might charge more than the cost of a product and then pocket the difference. So they're basically their employer would be none the wiser. I think you see that sometimes actually when you go to drive-through restaurants and you see pay this amount, and there's like a little pay this amount type thing that shows like how much you're supposed to pay. It says, if asked for a different amount, call this number. Because that means that the employee is saying your Big Mac value meal costs this much, but really it costs less than that, and they're going to take the difference.
Yeah. I've heard of that happening. I've seen some signs like that that say that.
Yeah, and that's the reason why, is because evidently that company has had problems with embezzlement before, or they're trying to be proactive about it and make sure they don't have problems with it.
Yeah.
The other times, like you might see something where you're supposed to get a receipt, and if you don't get a receipt, you get something free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way they do that, is because if the employee is actually giving you the receipt, then there's that kind of backup that they're not going to actually charge you more than what it costs and pocket the difference.
And I would say, because that's not like a common practice, it's not like everybody does that or a certain chain always does that, I would say that probably is geared towards, if you have a problem, that's how you handle it as a manager. That there's, yeah, there's been some evidence of that occurring at your establishment, not just this is what all McDonald's do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it could happen anywhere. I mean, it could happen any place where there's not proper checks and balances in there. The employee could say, you know, it costs this much to do something,
mm-hmm,
and then not report it and not pocket and just pocket them themselves. Other times an employee might borrow money from a cash register, just kind of take some money out of it and then not put it back. But simply borrowing it is the act itself of the embezzlement, whether or not they put it back or not. And again, that's because they are in charge of that cash drawer, and they're the ones who are entitled to actually kind of possess it in a temporary sense during that time. And whenever they take the money out of the cash register and put it in their own pocket, then they have converted it to their own use. It's become theft at that point.
Right. Well, somebody wrote in, and I think that's one of the things that they asked about. It said, what if you took the money, but your intention was to give it back, but it was just discovered before you had a chance to put it back? Well, yeah. You know, it's like you say, the problem occurred when you took it.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't matter.
If you're just going to get $1 million and put it in the bank, and you're just going to get the interest and put the $1 million back.
Yeah. Now, another way that somebody might embezzle something, if they're being a bit more elaborate and they have a bit larger of an employer, if they're in charge of the books, they might set up a completely separate fictitious vendor who submits invoices to a company. And so what this person does is they submit an invoice from a vendor to a company, and then the company pays that vendor, and the vendor is really just that person.
Mm-hmm.
So they're embezzling the money that way.
Yeah, they could do it to a spouse or something like that, or a relative, and then basically it's not a real company, but they write it to that, and then the relative or whatever handles it for them.
Yeah. It's like, man, we spent a lot of money on widgets this quarter. Where did all these widgets go? So usually I think when they do that, it tends to be more for kind of services and things where you're not going to have some sort of tangible piece of property that you could tell that you didn't receive.
Well, it also depends on oversight. You know, if you have a bookkeeper or whatever that's keeping your all your finances, and you're not going in and checking them, or have another company that checks them, then you're open to whatever they might think of doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why a lot of times companies have annual audits. They do them every year, and they just have some sort of outside source, some sort of third party come in and do some sort of financial audit to make sure that the books are all in proper working order. Another way that seems kind of like maybe less like embezzlement, but is nonetheless embezzlement, is if you pad an expense account. So if you get a certain amount of money for your expenses when you're traveling and things like that, and you report more expenses than you actually used, and you take that money, that's a form of embezzlement. Taking inventory or office supplies for personal use. If you go grab an extra ream of paper from your office and bring it home, you've kind of embezzled that paper by a technical definition of it. So, yeah.
That's all that. What about if you drive around a company car and don't report that you have a company car?
Well, I mean, that could be one thing. If you have a company car and you're only supposed to use it just for work, and you actually take that company car and you drive it for other reasons, like you drive around town with it on the weekend when you're not supposed to, and you don't report that, and you use like gas money and things like that, then that's embezzlement too. You know, regardless of just the gas, it's the actual wear and tear on the vehicle and the act of using it. That can be construed as embezzlement.
Yeah, I think the difference is, does the car stay at work and you know, drive your own car back and forth to work and then use this for work? Or are you taking that car home with you? And if you're taking that car home with you, then you've got to claim the certain portion of that as income.
Yeah. And then if you move something from like a customer's account into your personal account, so for example, like in the context of an attorney, if you have like a trust account where you have a client's money held in trust, and then you take that money and convert it by putting it into your operating account or writing a check to yourself, if you haven't done the work and you're supposed to be holding that money in trust, that is embezzlement. And it also gets you in a lot of trouble as far as ethically with a lawyer disciplinary board as well.
Well, it could get you disbarred.
It very easily could. I remember there was a episode of, I think it was Melrose Place, I don't know, in the 90s. And there was one of the newer characters was an attorney, and he was trying to get engaged, and he took money from his trust account to buy an engagement ring for his fiance.
Oh.
And he wasn't supposed to do that because that wasn't his money. That was his client's money.
Oh, man.
He said, you know what? I was getting ready to settle a case, and I was going to put it back. I just need the money now. But you know what? It doesn't matter. He embezzled the money.
That was tough.
Times were tough back then on Melrose Place.
Well, it may sound it may sound like sexist for me to say, but most of the ones I read about in the paper, it seems like that it's a woman working as a bookkeeper at places, and they do the embezzling. And I would think men are the ones that would be the ones that would do that. But in a whole lot of the case, at least around here, in local ones, and there have been quite a few. There was one that you remember with the City Mission that they were embezzling from them. And it just seems like that there's a whole lot. There was a volunteer fire department. And, I mean, volunteer fire departments just scrimp by, and somehow this lady had embezzled like $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I mean, I would struggle to think of a case where locally in the recent years where there's been a man charged with embezzlement. It does seem to be more frequently women that are charged with these embezzlement.
But that might be that in a lot of cases, the bookkeepers are, for some reason, I guess it's like in the days when there were secretaries, they were women. And a lot of times bookkeepers now seem to be predominantly women too, you know? Yeah, so maybe it's just, there's a greater number of them.
You know, and if you think about it too, if you've ever, I know when I worked hourly, you know, I was always very punctual about punching my time clock in and out. And there was an instance where somebody had asked somebody else to punch their time card out later so they'd get the benefit of having that extra time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's embezzlement because you're essentially stealing from your company by, you know, falsifying your time records.
That's a
form of embezzlement as well.
When we had a few more employees than what we have now, we used to have that problem. People punching each other in and out, and they were coming late or leaving early. and their buddy would punch men around, and they'd take turns doing that. So I put in a bio clock where you have to use your thumbprint to punch in and out.
Really?
Yeah. So you don't have to, you can't fake that unless the guy cuts his thumb off or something.
Well, you know, if somebody's willing to cut their thumb off just so they can get a few extra minutes on their time card.
Yeah.
I'd say go ahead and give it to them.
Give it to them anyway, huh?
Yeah. I didn't even know a bio clock or anything like that existed. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're pretty common.
Are they expensive?
No. Well, I mean, a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you probably would save that in a year.
Yeah, I don't really have that problem anymore, but I already had the clock installed, so I still have it. There for a while, I had some real characters.
You could probably do like a fake bio clock. It's like it doesn't even actually really read the person's fingerprint. But people think that it does, you know? It's like... Now, another form of embezzlement could be also if you take bribes or kickbacks. So, for example, if a certain vendor wants you to use them and you have the discretion about who to choose, and they say, hey, if your company chooses us, I'll give you $100 or I'll take you out to dinner or something like that. Just, you know, use us. Now, if you don't disclose that to your employer and you got the benefit of that, then that could be looked at as embezzlement as well, because you're using your position in order to get something extra you otherwise wouldn't be entitled to, and you're possibly taking something from your employer.
Yeah, well, you could allow them to overcharge your company, and then they split that with you or give you part they're overcharging.
Yeah.
Do that. We had the state road people here, what, a year or two ago, that they had a big deal about that they were awarding these contracts to this group in North Carolina or something for the roads in West Virginia. And come to find out that they weren't even looking at competing bids. They were just giving it to them, but the guy was getting money back that was awarding these bids. And so they put them, put them on trial, and I don't know what the results were. Somebody had to pay some money back. They didn't really get much in the way of jail time. But the next thing you know, here's another contract that the state of West Virginia entered into with this company that they had just done that with. And so everybody got all up in arms. Why are we still doing business with them? Why did we just award them a contract after we just had this legal situation where there were kickbacks involved?
Hey, say what you want about their ethics. Those guys can pour some asphalt.
An asphalt. Well, now that's different from asset.
That's right.
An asphalt is like if you had a scar.
I was trying to stick with the same theme there. I'm glad you picked up on that. I throw out these little softballs and, you know, little tidbits every now and then, wonder if we can kind of go with it. So every now and then we connect.
I picked up on it. Butt humor we're good with.
we definitely nail that one.
That's a sad state of affairs.
So something else that can be used is if you are setting up some sort of check or credit card through some sort of kiting scheme where... What you're doing is you would basically be writing a check from one account, depositing in another, and then writing a check from that account and depositing in another, and you're taking advantage of the time that it takes between the different accounts, because banks don't necessarily realize there's insufficient funds immediately. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of go back and forth, and that's called kiting.
That was more common in the older days. You don't get that as much now because of electronic banking, and they used to have to send checks to like a clearinghouse. And so like we would send our checks. I want to say when I worked at the bank, we used to send our checks to, I want to say Richmond, Virginia was where our clearinghouse was. So the banks had to physically travel there and then they dispersed them from there to whichever bank they went to, the actual bank the check was drawn off of. And so your check didn't clear till it was mailed to those different locations and got in. So it might take 4 or 5 days for a check to clear.
Yeah.
But nowadays, they do it electronically through scanning, and you don't really have much of that.
Another way you could possibly be embezzling, too, is if you're stealing money through like kind of a Ponzi scheme. So, for example, the whole Enron thing could also be looked at kind of embezzling as well, because you're really not giving people money based on investments. You're giving them money based on other people that you've gotten to draw into the pyramid scheme.
You're giving them the Ponzi scheme. The sucker's money that came in after them.
That's right. Which, you know, we're talking about embezzlement, but you're also kind of starting now, when you're talking about Ponzi schemes and things like that, to get into a little bit of fraud. So the difference between embezzlement and fraud is that fraud, you don't necessarily have the element of trust there to begin with. Embezzlement means that you pretty much have control of the property more yourself. And that's kind of, you know, generally when you think about embezzlement, you think about bookkeepers and falsifying records and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the examples I gave about like taking home a ream of paper or some pencils or things like that, you know, that kind of happens at offices probably quite a bit, just, you know, but nobody's going to prosecute somebody for embezzlement for taking a ream of paper. So,
yeah, but it would be frowned upon.
It would be frowned upon.
So. But what? Yeah, usually embezzlement is more when somebody has access to funds, and they get the idea that they can use some of these funds, and whether they plan on putting it back or not. There's a whole lot of them that have said that. I was in a temporary bind, and I needed this money to get by. I had every intention of putting it back, but one thing led to another, and then instead of putting it back, I had to borrow more. You know, my horse didn't come in. It was a sure bet.
You know, when I was in law school and we were doing talking in the ethics class and professional responsibility and all that, and they were talking about the difference between, you know, trust account and your operating account and things like that. The way it was taught to me is that not only is it unethical to take money like that, there's no amount of money that you can put a price tag on for your law license. It doesn't make any sense. Like if you're a little short on a bill or something like that, you know, times are tight. It's not worth $500 to take that from a trust account to pay a bill because your law license is worth way more than $500. You're better off just eating the $500 and having your power cut off for a month until your horse does come in. You know, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I mean, whether or not you're looking at it from an ethical point of view, from a simple numerical business point of view, it doesn't make any sense for lawyers to take money from trust accounts, but it happens all the time. You see it in the bar news quite often where an attorney has misappropriated client funds.
Mm-hmm.
So it does happen.
Another one that really sticks in my craw is when government officials do it. Like we had the situation here, that terrible flooding that we had back in, I think it was 2016. Mm-hmm. And they had like a 1,000-year flood that wiped out the Greenbrier. Remember, and they couldn't have that golf tournament there and everything when that hit.
Oh yeah.
And they had just towns that were just washed away. So we got all this federal relief money, and here they are investigating like 2 or 3 years later, and all these people are still waiting for their what's left of their house to be cleaned up, and they're waiting to build. They were like, well, where did all that money go? And 2 or 3 of the people that were in charge of disbursing that money had pocketed it. I mean, I'm talking about millions of dollars, and they had pocketed it and then were just trying to say, oh, well, we did all we could with it. This is just all that's left. No, you can't account for it. It's gone. And they just took the money that was meant to rebuild people's lives.
Yeah. That's sad when people take advantage of people's downtrodden situations and don't do what they're supposed to do. Yeah. That happens quite a bit, especially in Florida. Whenever hurricanes come through and people get their roofs ripped off and things mm-hmm. like that, all of a sudden all these different roofing companies appear.
Yeah.
These insurance claims, take the insurance money, and they've actually never fixed the roof.
Yeah.
So these, you know, fly-by-night roofing companies, you have to watch out for them.
Yeah, that's a real problem, especially if you're a senior. All us seniors, they look at us for all these scams to try to get us to fall for.
Well, and there's actually, most states have laws on the books now that have increased penalties for defrauding or doing some sort of economic theft to a senior citizen. So there's stiffer penalties for doing that.
We need more protection. Like, it drove me crazy. I was watching the Marshall game the other night, and they kept the only commercial they ran every time it was a commercial break was the I've fallen and I can't get up. And they really?
I haven't seen that commercial in years.
I know. And they showed this commercial every time. They saved it all these years so they could show it during this game, I think, because they showed it over and over. But it shows 3 different versions of an old folk falling and can't get up. And the last one is this well-dressed older gentleman, and he's kind of leaning on one arm, laying down, leaning up on his elbow, and he's pushing the button. He says, I've fallen in the park and I can't get up. And I'm just thinking, here's 911 on the other end. And they're like, hey, it's Albert. he's at the park again and he's falling over. Which one of you can go stand him up this time? You know, why are there other people walking by that say, hey, fella, can I give you a hand up? Because he's obviously, he's not in any pain. He's just leaning on his elbow, sitting there. So I give him a hand. Get the guy up off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a park, you would think there might be somebody walking around. I mean,
but does Albert wait for somebody to come by? No, he calls 911 and wants them to send a fire truck there to pick him up.
Well, I can imagine in your home, though, I mean, that could be something a bit more important. Because it's not like somebody's going to be walking through your house and they're like, oh, this person might need help.
Yeah, well, that's true. But in the park, in broad daylight, somebody should be nearby to say, hey, buddy, can I help you there?
Most parks, I would think that would happen. But I don't know.
Of course, he wasn't wearing a mask, and with COVID and all, maybe nobody wanted to get within 6 feet.
That's right. And get a big stick and pry him up using a lever and a fulcrum.
Yeah, hold on to this stick and I'll pull you up. You know, I had a personal dealing with embezzlement one time.
Really?
When I worked at a bank, for about 3 years while I was finishing college. And
yes, your banking stories and your
repossession stories
have appeared on this podcast several times.
But there was a guy, he was this nice little bald-headed guy, ran the vault there. And I mean, just as nice a guy as you'd ever want to meet. And, you know, and he was in there the whole time I was there. Well, about the last year that I was there, all of a sudden I hear Carl got fired. And I'm like, why? Well, he was embezzling. And so he was the one that was in charge of putting the money in the vault and bringing the money out of the vault. And apparently he had some kind of financial trouble and he took some money. I never did hear how much. But it was one of the same type things. He took a little bit, and that helped some, but then he had more problems, so he took a little bit more and took a little bit more. Well, before he knew it, I guess he'd taken more than he figured he could ever pay back. So I think the auditors came in and audited the vault and found this money missing, and of course, he was the only guy that put money in and out of the vault. So they caught him, and I felt terrible for him because he was a nice little family man, had a wife and kids and everything, and this happened. I never did hear what happened to him.
He was never heard from again.
No. Maybe they locked him in the vault and wouldn't let him come out. Like a timeout.
Yeah. Well, those positions of trust where you're the only one, that kind of leads to people having those ideas, I think.
I guess. But that was a sad day for me to hear that about poor old Carl.
Huh. Well, you had some other instances that you'd researched where people had embezzled things.
Oh yeah, they were much more famous and got much more money.
Much more money than poor old Carl.
Poor old Carl. I never did hear how much he got, but I know it couldn't have been much.
He was just trying to get his 1982 Chevy Malibu fixed.
Probably. It probably was something like that. There was one that was in the March of 1998, the First National Bank of Chicago. Four employees had gotten together and figured out how they could embezzle money from some large companies that were there. And their plan was to set up dummy accounts in Australia. And once they moved the money there, they were all going to leave the country. So they were in the midst of doing this when Merrill Lynch came in and was doing their own audit of their funds and found $20 million missing from their account.
Wow.
And they quickly pinpointed one of the four guys that was involved in this, and he gave up the other three, and so they got them before they could leave the country. So they were able to get the money back from these dummy accounts in Australia.
You know what I always think of when I'm thinking of embezzlement and things like that? There was a movie called Office Space. You seen that, right?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, and what they were doing was called skimming. They were taking small amounts. Which is still a form of embezzlement. Now, I think in that instance, in that movie, I don't think they necessarily were the ones who were in a position of trust with the money itself, but they were employees of that company and therefore, you know, could be viewed as a form of embezzlement by skimming that money off the top.
Well, the one guy was an IT guy, and yeah. he had access to the banking electronics.
Right.
And so the idea was, is that sometimes these transactions were not whole pennies.
Right.
They were like 10 and a half cents. So right. All his algorithm did was round the half up to 11 cents.
Yeah.
So they weren't taking much. it was just a half a cent. But with all these transactions taking place and doing that, that would add up. And they were thinking, you know, maybe they'd get a few thousand dollars, maybe $10,000 or $20,000, something like that out of it. But then he launched it, and I don't know exactly what happened.
They put the decimal point in the wrong place.
Yeah, so it started rounding up dollars. So suddenly they're $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, and it's still round. And there's no way to stop it once they got it started. They're trying to figure out, what are we going to do? They're going to catch that. They wouldn't have caught these few, but they're going to catch this.
They were worried they're going to end up in federal pound me in the asset prison.
Yeah, that's right. And if you remember, Jennifer Aniston was the girlfriend.
That's right.
And she was kept asking him, because he told him what the plan was, and she kept asking, now, how is this not stealing again? It's not stealing. How is this not stealing again?
Yeah, that's a great movie.
It is. I love that movie. Another one. You ever heard of the comedian Dane Cook?
Yeah.
Well, his half-brother, Daryl McCauley, was his manager for years, and it seems that his own half-brother embezzled millions of dollars from him. So eventually they found out. The most shocking example of it was he wrote himself a $3 million check and forged Dane Cook's signature to do that. Well, and he only got a six-year prison sentence.
Didn't Dane Cook, wasn't he accused of embezzling jokes from other comedians?
Well, he may have been. It does seem I don't know. It seemed like there's something about him, but I don't remember what it was. Another one that doesn't run into big money, but it's in and of itself individually, but overall, is the Girl Scouts lose thousands of dollars a year from parents embezzling the kids' Girl Scout cookie money.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they say that's a very common thing, and while there's no individual cases of more than $10,000, the cumulative effect from Girl Scouts all across America getting embezzled is a large amount.
I can only imagine. Wow, that's sad.
And one of the other Ponzi schemes, we mentioned Ponzi schemes, and we mentioned the one most famous probably is Bernie Madoff. Uh-huh. And Bernie Madoff with about $50 billion. And that's a lot of money.
Yeah, any way you slice it, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but he's serving time in prison now. Alan Stanford was about the same type thing as Bernie Madoff. He was the CEO of the Stanford Financial Group, and with his status, he was able to con people out of $8 billion. He was later sentenced to 110 years in prison. But a lot of these people get off light on the sentencing because the law is more concerned with recovering the money.
Yeah. And the thing is that if you're trying to get what's called restitution for the victim in these cases, and if somebody is serving a 110 year sentence, they're not going to be able to work and repay that debt. And that's one of the main things that really, if you're looking to make somebody whole, that's what you want to do. You want to punish the person for what they did, but really you want to make the victim whole, because what does it matter if the person's punished or not? I mean, really, if you're the victim, you just want your money back.
Right. Yeah. So that's what happens in a lot of these cases. Now, if they've moved the money somewhere and won't tell you, that's the ones that get the long prison sentences, or they've already given it out or whatever, and you can't recover it. But if you can recover it, a lot of these people, I mean, there was one lady that she got fired for embezzling at one place, and she got out of jail, and another place hired her, and she embezzled from them. And it's like, did you not check her resume?
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of punishment sometimes if you can recover the money. Yeah. Now, this one was one from the 70s, and this was the one I found was the most important. It was Robert Vesco. And Robert Vesco, the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, for those of you that don't know, said that he embezzled $224 million. But he never stood trial for these allegations, because as soon as the charges were filed, Vesco fled to the country to Havana, Cuba. The CIA tracked down Vesco, but unfortunately, Cuba refused to extradite him. So he spent the rest of his day in South American countries that had no extradition laws. He also, this was during a Watergate scandal, he paid more than $200,000 of illegal campaign contributions to Richard Nixon via his Richard Nixon's nephew. But I looked some of this up, and it what he actually did is before he went to Cuba, he actually went to Costa Rica, and he paid the president of Costa Rica, they don't know how much, but he paid him a bunch of money, to pass a law that they couldn't extradite him from Costa Rica. So they did that. He took the president there, took the money, and then they passed a law so they couldn't come get him. But what ended up happening is he was got involved in drug smuggling activity. So at some point, the Costa Rican government kicked him out. Yeah. So that's when he went to Cuba. But even his life in Cuba, his death in Cuba, is mysterious because they said that he died of cancer in a Cuban prison. But there was never nobody ever confirmed the body. And there are rumors that he actually paid off the Cuban government to let him go, and he faked his own death. And this was also followed up in a version of The Blacklist, if you ever watched that TV show. They had Robert Vesco. Yeah, they had Robert Vesco episode on there, and it followed that same storyline.
Taken from the pages of real life.
That's right, just like SUV.
So I think, like, the key is if you're going to embezzle a lot of money, you need to bribe people, too.
Yeah, you need to bribe people. Or if you're going to embezzle a lot of money, you need to do one of two things. Either get out of the country and go somewhere they can't get you, or hang on to it so that when they catch you, you can say, all right, you got me. Here's your money back. Now slap me on the wrist and let me go back to work.
So you get it, but you can't spend it.
Right. Don't spend it until you're sure you got away with it.
What do you do with it?
Let it be collecting interest. Hell, if you stole $224 million, put that in the bank, let it collect interest. And a few years later, you want to clear your conscience. Here's your money back. How much interest you figure $224 million would draw?
I would think a shrewd prosecutor would realize that it's been drawing interest this entire time and demand that back to make the victim whole.
Well, you could just convince him you were really stupid and you put it in a checking account. Everybody knows a checking account doesn't get you anything. Hell, they were charging me service charges for not using it.
Well, have you seen how much you get? Have you seen how much you get on a savings interest rate these days? It's not very much either.
One thing for sure, don't put it in a Wells Fargo bank. They'll find a way to get it.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. And the first one is going to be, what is embezzlement?
Embezzlement is a conversion of funds that you have access to from the place where they're supposed to go to somewhere they're not supposed to go, which may be your own pocket.
And generally that involves violating some sort of fiduciary duty.
Yes, and trust.
And what does fiduciary mean?
Fiduciary means money, a monetary duty.
Well, actually, fiduciary means involving trust, and usually it does involve some sort of relationship between a trustee and a beneficiary where there's some sort of monetary difference between the two. So you're kind of right there.
I was around it.
And we talked about this briefly, and you were quite the expert on it, given your prior banking history. What is kiting?
Kiting is floating a check. So you put a check in one bank that you have that is not a good check, and then you write a check off of it before that check will clear to try to get some of the funds that aren't really there.
That's right. And in this day and age, it's kind of not really around anymore, but back in the day, people would actually take these and go from account to account to account to account.
Yeah.
And float the checks and kite. It's called kiting because a kite kind of flies in the sky.
That's like, that's like kind of like the ones that they do now. They'll send you a check and they'll say, here, deposit this in your account. Here's this $1 million. I just want 10,000 out of it.
Right.
And so you wire transfer me $10,000 and you get to keep the million.
Yeah. I had carried on a correspondence with a gentleman for a while, just for fun, when I wasn't very busy at work, when I started my own practice many years ago. I wasn't very busy at work.
Was he a Nigerian prince? I had that guy get sent me an email.
No, he was, I think he actually was Nigerian. And there was some sort of doctor in England who had the same last name as me who had passed away. And some of the money was going to be mine. And I, this was when I was watching Lost a lot. And I told him there was a Mr. Echo that had come along and offered me the same proposition. And he said, well, Mr. Echo is lying to you. I'm the only one that can do this. I had a lot of fun there for a while. And then I kind of got tired of doing it.
You're as bad as my dad. My dad does that with every solicitor that calls. He starts trying to talk them out of doing that anymore, that it's a bad, bad thing to be in. They ought to give it up.
Well, I figure the more time that I'm wasting talking to them, that's less time they're actually screwing somebody over who they might actually screw over.
Who might fall for it, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm kind of doing this. I'm kind of trying to be like, you know, some sort of smart-ass vigilante.
Yeah. I seen the video on YouTube or something of the guy that did that, that was one of those Microsoft ones, where they called and said, you need to do this or that for your computer. And they were trying to, and you turn over access basically of your computer to these people, and they hack in and get your information. And so he was just playing dumb. He knew what was going on, but he was just playing dumb. And he kept this guy tied up on the phone for like 30 minutes while he kept acting like he was going to go along. But he said, well, what about this or that? And the guy kept playing around. Then he'd go to do it. He'd say, there, I did it. No, you didn't do it. You just turned your computer off. Turn it back on.
I did that a couple of times too. Like I sent the email with the attachment. Did you not get it? And there, it would be an email with no attachment.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I just didn't attach it right. Let me try again. So there's actually a whole, if you get on the internet and you start searching that out, there's a whole subgenre of people doing this with people who try to fraud people, where they get them on the hook and they kind of get back at them. It's kind of entertaining, but.
Yeah, I wish there was a way to just reach through the phone and grab people around the neck.
I'm glad there's not.
From a legal aspect,
yeah, that could cause a whole bunch of other problems. So. Well, that's going to do it for the legal brief. Did pretty well. I think, you know, if we kind of look at embezzlement versus theft, the important thing you got to remember is that embezzlement, there's some sort of trust, and you actually have the right to have temporary possession of that property or whatever, as in some sort of trust capacity. Whereas theft is, you're basically just stealing it. You don't have the right to have it ever. You're just taking it.
Yeah, embezzlement is more like you have a lawful access to the funds, but you're supposed to do it for the things you're being trusted to do with it.
Yeah. Now, if you are studying embezzlement for the bar exam, good night. That is one of the worst areas to be tested on the bar exam, because what you're looking at is all these different old common law definitions, and there's very small, slight little nuances between larceny and embezzlement and theft. And usually it can just turn on the one word that might be used or wasn't used. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even going to try to explain the difference on that, because I probably couldn't do it. I'd rather explain the rule against perpetuities. But so if you're studying for the bar and you want to learn about embezzlement versus larceny and theft, go to your bar study books, because that's where you're going to have to learn about it. I'm not here to teach you on that.
Well, you know, those guys that do those embezzlements, like Robert Vesco and Bernie Madoff and that's Alan Stanford, they're all three asses. So I guess you could say they're an asset.
You tied it all together. Congratulations.
That's the callback.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is social media. I watched a show on Netflix the other night that scared the hell out of me. It's called The Social Dilemma. It's a documentary about how social media is designed not just to keep you connected with friends and family, but to addict you to your phone in order for them to make money. All the Facebook, Snapchats, TikToks, YouTubes, etc., etc., are running algorithms on you to determine what will get you to look at your phone the longest, so that they make the most money. We all knew they make money, but what I didn't realize is that they consider us the product. They are selling us to corporations that want to get their ads in front of us, and the more ads they can get us to see, the more money they make. How do they assure you see more ads? By them changing our habits and moving us to somewhere that they can predict what we want and then put that in front of us. These algorithms that determine and predict what we are going to do are basically robots that learn. You know, AI. They learn what we do and how we do it and what we like and what we don't like, and they use that against us. Here is the really scary part. The people that created it don't even know how the AI does what it does or what it is determining. They built it and told it to look at all those things and then refine our likely preferences. Everything you look at or click is constantly updating and refining even further so that it knows your habits better than you know yourself. There is one thing the AI has learned it can do that makes a lot of these predictions even easier to make. Push us further to the left or further to the right. The majority is usually in the middle. The middle is a little homogeneous, however, and makes it harder to predict. If the algorithm can create more divide, then it can separate us more and make more predictions about us. These launched in about 2010. We have been getting pushed by robots in opposite directions for the last decade. You hear people say all the time, we are a country that is more divided now than ever. The development of misinformation is a tool that is pushing us into these divisions. Only in recent years have we heard about fake news or the lack of a definitive truth. The truth is nebulous and constantly changing. But it shouldn't be. This is not a conspiracy theory like Pizzagate. This is real. The downfalls of most great societies have come from within. This is our event horizon. At the hands of robots. I wish I was joking or just being a dumbass like usual, but I am dead serious. We haven't changed internally. We have been persuaded without our knowledge by our phones, and we are being pushed to extremes. There is a newly formed group called something like Humans for Ethical Technology. They are, in effect, the people from all of the different platforms that built and designed these things and now realize what a pox they have wrought upon us. They are now trying to warn us of the dangers before it is too late. These companies could turn these things off, but then they would be losing billions of dollars. So they are selling your soul as well as their own. So whether you are right or left, you are being pushed that way and made to feel divided so billion-dollar companies can become trillion-dollar companies. They said the number one way to fight this is to turn off your notifications. If the only notifications you get are your phone ringing or a text, that's fine. The phone itself is not evil. It is the social media platforms that we are all plugged into. There is a setting you can bring up that shows how many hours you average a day being on your phone. If you are awake 16 hours a day and you have 2 or more hours of screen time, you are being robbed of a lot of your day. So unplug and quit feeding the robots. Turn off your notifications and reclaim your day. Don't let these money-grubbing bastards win. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.